Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
All right, time now to continue our global tour of world Christianity, as we've been calling it, with our tour guide, Miriam Aidney. She's the author of this book, Kingdom Without Borders. A researcher, an anthropologist, she's basically scanned the whole world to see where the Christian faith is actually really, really jumping and leaping ahead, and it's been fascinating to see some of those countries. We've already looked at places like Africa, Latin America, China, and tonight the Muslim world, and that's a world of contradictions. Some Christians are free to worship, other Christians are persecuted by their governments, neighbours, and even their own families. Miriam's with us again. Miriam, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
You've spent a bit of time thinking about the whole issue of Islam, haven't you? This is the second book, really, that touches on the Islamic faith. You've written a book about women in the Islamic world.
Yes, it's called Daughters of Islam, Building Bridges with Muslim Women. And it covers women from Indonesia to Africa to the Arab world to the Iranian nation to Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and so forth, China, and, of course, Europe and North America. And I suppose you have a few Muslims in Australia as well.
We do. And I guess that just goes to show that when you think of the Muslim world, quote unquote, you normally think of the Middle East, but actually, you know, Muslims are right across the world.
Well, in fact, the biggest Muslim country is Indonesia, and the biggest Muslim population outside of Indonesia would be in South Asia, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Bangladesh.
Fifth of the world's population now, I think.
Yes.
There you are. Right. Now, your book focuses on Iran. This latest book, when I say your book, the Kingdom Without Borders book, you really focus on Iran as an example of a Muslim society. So let's talk about Iran a little bit, and you can throw any other illustrations on it in as you see. Tell us about the Christians in Iran, the numbers, the nature of the churches there, etc.
It's quite an amazing story. I say in my book that there are 100,000 Christians inside Iran. That's a very conservative estimate. Mm-hmm. There are other very responsible people that will go as high as 1 million believers within Iran. Now, some of these are historic churches. The Assyrian church, the Armenian church, are quite ancient in their heritage. And they basically have a moderate amount of freedom to worship because they are not seen as apostate by the Muslim authorities.
Why is
that? Well, because they have never been Muslim. They have always been Armenian or something. But there is also a body of Jewish people who have become followers of Jesus, have become Christians in Iran. The Jews have been there since they were taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon, and then the Babylonian Empire was eventually conquered by the Medo-Persians. And remember, Cyrus in Bible history returned the Jews then to Jerusalem, but some of them elected not
Chose
to go
to stay.
Back.
That's right, yeah.
And so you remember in Bible history, Daniel and Esther and Nehemiah, they were all in the Persian Empire there, which is the same as the Iranian, we kind of use those terms more or less interchangeably. And so there's a body of Christians in Iran that come from that Jewish community as well. Now, those people all have somewhat more freedom to worship, but then there is also quite a body of people who were Muslims who have come to faith in Jesus, and they get persecuted because the view is that the word Muslim means submission to God. Islam means submission. And so if you are submitted to God and you leave that for something else, this cannot be seen as an improvement from the Muslim point of view. This is not going to improve the community. It's not going to improve the morals. It's not going to bring God's blessing if you leave submission to God. And technically, an apostate is worthy of death because basically an apostate is polluting the community. But whether that apostate is actually attacked depends greatly on the society. It varies enormously, whether it's just a matter of persuasion or argument or physical attack.
So you've got the historic Christian churches that aren't considered apostate because they never were Muslims, and you've got people that are formerly Jews becoming Christians, then Muslims becoming Christians, and they're the last group are kind of the ones that are most likely to face the persecution. So what kind of persecution can they face in Iran that you know of?
Well, I think you could start with people might be fired from their jobs. People might be obviously rejected as husbands or wives, and that is if they are engaged or courting. And in some, I don't know in Iran, but in some countries, families will actually break up, in-laws, fathers-in-law will break up marriages when one partner becomes a Christian. And then more serious, jailing, torture, and death also. Some key pastors have been killed. I mean, nationally prominent pastors have been killed because it is felt that this is a pollution, this is a damage to society. It's a dangerous movement, and it needs to be nipped in the bud with capital punishment.
Yeah. This is Open House. Miriam Aidney, author of Kingdom Without Borders, is with us. We're doing this kind of world tour of global Christianity. Now, that's the bad side of the story. There is some element of freedom, as you mentioned before, the fact that there's the Armenian and Assyrian churches. Somewhere also I heard the fact that if former Muslims who are now followers of Jesus don't get baptized, they're in a better position.
Yes, I've heard that too, and that may be so. However, quite a lot of them like to get baptized, so then that causes problems. Obviously, not all Muslim background Christians are in jail. Quite a number of them are out, and they tend to keep a low profile. They tend to not worship in large and flamboyant groups, but in smaller groups, and simply to be salt and light in society, praying quietly, studying the Bible quietly, being good neighbors, and in that way, the good news spreads to other people who are attracted to this kind of thing.
So the history of the gospel actually in Iran, let's stay on Iran for a moment there, is really quite fascinating. Like you mentioned before, Daniel, Esther, Nehemiah, all of those biblical names were actually in what is now modern-day Iran, which is quite fascinating. And then the gospel, the story of Jesus actually coming to Persia, now Iran. When did that happen?
Well, as you will remember, in Acts chapter 2, we read about Pentecost. That was the Jewish festival, and there was the experience of the tongues of fire, and people understanding the gospel in their own language in a miraculous kind of way. There were people there at that festival from all throughout the Jewish world. I mean, people from North Africa, people from Persia, Iran, people from lots of places that were celebrating at this Jewish festival in Jerusalem. So they were celebrating there, and then they heard about Jesus in their own language. And it transformed them. And they went home to their various countries with this transformed understanding. And some of them went home to Iran. They were the descendants of Esther and Daniel, the Jewish believers in Iran, and they went back now as followers of Jesus. And so churches began, and by 500 A.D., there was quite a body of Christian literature in the Persian language, and there were cities like Herat and Meshed that had bishops, and one of the greatest missionary movements in all history went right through Iran, which was the Nestorian mission movement along the Silk Road, which went as far as China. And that was partly powered by Iranian Christians in the early eras.
Well, there you are.
And then we have Catholics and Protestants coming along later on to re-energize the movement.
Yeah, and so what about in recent history? What kind of mission activity by Christians from outside of Iran is actually happening now?
Especially after the
fundamentalist revolution back in 1979. I mean, it'd be very, very hard to know how much missionary activity is actually happening in Iran now.
There isn't a lot of foreign mission presence in Iran. It is by and large Iranians themselves. There is Christian radio which comes in. And I visited in California an Iranian church of 400 Iranian members who run a Christian, actually they run a Christian TV ministry into Iran 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm. And you can imagine as a radio person filling up all that programming. So they do a lot of listen. They receive a lot of calls from Iran, people that have problems. And they listen to them, and they counsel them on air, and then they pray for them. And then there is a follow-up on the on email and the internet with them. But and I had the privilege of visiting the youth program director, who was creating his first Persian Christian rap videos. And he said that the youth of Iran are really troubled, and a lot of them are into drugs because they're frustrated with the fundamentalist regime. They're also frustrated by the embargoes from the rest of the world. They're frustrated with Iran's current direction, and in this frustration, a lot of them turn to drugs. And so an alternative is to listen to this, watch this Christian TV and listen to Christian radio. And there are some Bible schools outside the country that Iranian Christians attend, and then they return to Iran, and some other training opportunities outside the country as well. And there are Iranian churches planted. I know some in Singapore, some in Korea, some in Europe, Canada, the United States, various places. I would assume perhaps in Australia as well.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. And of course, we can't talk about the way that the Christian message is actually being communicated in the Islamic world without talking about these miracle dreams and visions and things that are happening. It's actually, there's no missionary involved, but Jesus mm-hmm. seems to be appearing to Muslims. It might be in a dream, it might be in some sort of vision or something. It's really quite dramatic and miraculous, and it's being reported on more and more and more.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing to talk with some of these people that have had these dreams.
Give us an example,
an Iranian woman who, she is a nurse, and she always had a hunger for God. And she received a number of visions, but she resisted the idea that Jesus could be God, and she actually was invited to a church at one point, and she went, but then again was very offended by the idea that Jesus could be God. And then one night, she was frustrated with the Christians that had invited her to church, and she wrote a letter to her father telling him how stupid Christians were to think that Jesus could be God. And she scooted across the bed to go and mail the letter to her father. And as she was getting up to go out and mail it, she saw feet coming toward her. And over the feet was a garment that was patterned in a Jewish fashion that she recognized from having done some public health nursing in the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw feet beneath it. And then this, whoever it was, this person put its hand on her face and said, "Go to sleep, the Lord is with you." And she fell asleep, and she slept all night. And in the morning, she woke up, and as she was waking up, she remembered those feet. And she sleepily said, "God, who was that who was in my room last night, that with the Jewish man that was wearing the Jewish outfit?" And she heard a great choir singing, "The Lord Jesus Christ." And she was so shocked, she fell out of bed, she fell on her face, and she said, "Oh, God, please forgive me. I didn't realize that Jesus was divine."
Yeah.
You have to understand my background. I'm from Iran. I'm a Muslim. It's so hard for us to see Jesus as God.
Yeah.
But she experienced real transformation of life and became a very strong follower of Jesus.
Wow, I was going to ask you that. You know, a vision, of course, would certainly set you back in your tracks, but so many Muslims are willing to face persecution from their government, their neighbors, even their families for claiming the name of Jesus, for following him, for saying, yes, he is actually divine. What are they getting? You know, why would they even go to the point of being willing to lose their lives to follow him?
Well, I think the experience of the love of God and the experience that they can personally communicate directly with God. I had a student myself from Africa who was a professor in National University there, and she had become a Christian in Canada where she was studying. She returned, and 6 months later, she was dead. I believe killed by poisoning by a relative.
Boy.
Because of her faith. But I think that if she were asked if she would do it again, there is no question but that she would, because the love of Jesus was so real in her life. And because she told me, she said, I can come to God, I can pray to God at any time, and I know he hears me. And this was such a contrast with her former experience, when she could only pray at certain times, and at other times she couldn't pray. And she said, now I can come at any time, and I know he hears me.
Yeah. Well, what a fascinating journey. We're going to head off to the Hindu world next week for our final stop on this little whistle-stop tour that we've been doing for this whole segment. It's been fascinating. Thanks, Miriam. We'll talk to you in a week's time.
All right.
Yeah, Miriam Aidney, author of Kingdom Without Borders, and our tour guide, I guess you could say, for this world tour of global Christianity.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.